You good? Back up. No? Good morning, everyone, and welcome to part four. I believe, yeah. At least part four, right? Hope so. Yeah. Just before we start, just a couple of announcements. First of all, this topic, which we're working through, the mindfulness connection to the flow of mind and heart and so on, we're doing today and next week. And we're going to end it next week. The following week, which is the Thursday after the Tuesday night function, Rabbi Label Wolf will give the session on the Thursday morning as a special treat. Not a substitute for the Tuesday night, of course, but that will be a special evening. But he will do the Thursday morning. He's agreed to do it. He's staying on a couple of days. And the topic will be, actually, the topic kind of fits in a little bit, flows on. The topic he'll be speaking on is emotional freedom, taming anxiety to create inner calm. Looks like a nice, sounds like a great topic. So that's in 2 weeks' time. Please spread the word. Because it's a special opportunity. Just another announcement before we begin is for those that can make it or would be interested, tomorrow night, you would have seen on the emails, tomorrow night, Friday night, we're doing another installment of the Mindful Minion. That's tomorrow night at 6 to 7 o'clock. Okay. So what I want to do is, last week we covered some ground, but actually we stopped in the middle of something, so I want to just go back a little bit, review, and in the review also develop a thought which we mentioned last week, which I want to extrapolate on and develop a little bit, and then continue on. So let's just go through a bit of a review first. So last week we talked about the difference between the mind and the heart, first of all, that the mind is the door through which existence enters us. So that's everything from the outside is processed through the mind. And that's our tool to be able to absorb and internalize and process information from the outside in. Whereas emotions is the other way around. Emotions is the door through which we respond to the outside existence, right? So that's how we define the difference between the mind and heart, intellect and emotion, which makes being aware or being focused or processing it properly a lot more difficult, because if emotions is about connection to the outside world and how we respond, and the doorway through that is there for us to go out and connect with the rest of the world, people, existence, experiences, and so on, that becomes more challenging and difficult because the I is very present there, right? Intellect is much more objective because it's the outside world talking to the I. Emotions is the I talking to the world, and that's more difficult, however crucial, because the essence of the human experience is relationships. We talked about the difference between being lonely and loneliness, or being alone versus loneliness, and emotions allow us to create relationships to the rest of the world, to people, to God, and that's why it's so crucial. Emotions are so important, and we divide it into three. We said the lack of emotion is just loneliness. People don't have emotions, live an isolated life. Healthy emotions is what connects us to the world with harmony, with a continuous flow, a peaceful flow and a sense of peacefulness. And then you have people who have emotions but unhealthy emotions, and they connect okay, but they connect badly. And then that connection often happens together with hurt, conflict, tension, disharmony, and so on and so forth. So then we went on to discuss, therefore, how mindfulness comes into all of this, because mindfulness, to be aware of intellect, to be aware of our thoughts, is difficult but doable, much more doable than being aware of our emotions. Because our emotions, the subjectivity gets in the way, the ego gets in the way, the I gets in the way. However, the first step of having mindful emotions is to learn to be aware of what we are feeling. And that's very difficult. A lot of people don't do this well, as we talked about last week in greater detail, right? So the first thing is to become aware, self-awareness. And it's about, as I said last week, bringing objectivity into the world of subjectivity, which is very difficult, to be really aware of what we are feeling. And as I said last week, and just to briefly repeat, that often people are not aware of what they're feeling because they don't want to be aware, because they feel then they have to transform or they have to change. Whereas that's actually not true. Sometimes just about knowing what our feeling is and where it's coming from. And if it is coming from the ego, to be aware of that and to understand that we're normal and it's fine. It's just we have to do something about it. Not necessarily we have to change that feeling. Plenty of place here. So for example, feelings of anger. It is completely natural to have a feeling of anger for people who push our buttons. And if you want to get to the level where you never have that feeling, you're crazy. I mean, most normal people have those feelings, right? Except for, as I said, a few select pious people exist in the world, or crazy people maybe. But most normal people have feelings of anger. It's just about what we do with those feelings. So it's okay to say, look, I feel very angry. I know where that's coming from. It's coming from a place of anger. I need to implement it a bit differently. I need to guide how I express that emotion. So that's just a good thing to know, and it's helpful in the process of becoming aware of our emotions. That was the first thing. And the second thing we talked about, the mindfulness connection to the concept of feelings, is that idea of the freshness of the moment, which is really, really important, because often being aware of our emotions or not being mindful creates such an inability to fully appreciate or experience the now, because we bring all the emotional baggage from yesterday or the hour before, and it's very, very difficult to express that or to experience that freshness of that moment, to really be able to process and experience the fullness of what we're experiencing. Now, I want to stop there and just explain that a little bit. We've done this before, but I want to just sort of really go into it, because it's such an important concept and such an important clarification to understand what that means. So let's just review a couple of aspects with regard to mindfulness. Mindfulness talks about the freshness of the moment, and what that means is they talk about each moment being like the only moment, and therefore letting go completely of the past and of the future and experiencing the moment as if it's the only moment. Living in the moment, we've talked about this many, many times, right? However, it is not true, of course, that the past, or the future for that matter, doesn't impact the present. Of course it does. So for example, if I enter into a particular experience and relationship with someone, and I've had really, really bad experiences with that person or with that particular idea or that particular process, obviously I'm going to have fear, for example. I'm going to be scared about what's going to happen next, and that fear is definitely going to dictate, and perhaps should dictate, about the steps that I take to experience that present moment, right? So what do we mean when we say that the past shouldn't impact on the moment, on the present moment at all? We should let go of the past. What does that actually mean? So from a Jewish point of view, let me just clarify, as we did when we talked about mindfulness, but let's just clarify it again. From a Jewish perspective, number one, there is no question that the past and the future play a very, very significant role. Why? Because as we've explained many, many times, the difference between living in the moment or for the moment. We live in the moment, but we don't live for the moment, because we live for a whole lifetime. We have a mission. That mission is a continuum. It's a process. It's a journey. It's something that God gives us when we are born, and hopefully we try and make good use of it and fulfill that mission and connect to that purpose through the journey of our whole life. And it's a journey of progression. It's a journey where we're supposed to grow from one step to the next. We're supposed to learn from yesterday and be better today. It's like that concept we've talked about many times, the idea of Yitziat Mitzrayim, going out of Egypt, where the Torah just a few weeks ago in the weekly portion talks about the 42 journeys that the Jewish people experienced when they left Egypt. And the commentaries explain, what does the Torah mean when it says 42 journeys in the plural? They didn't journey 42 times from Egypt. They journeyed 42 times in the desert, but they only journeyed once from the geographical place called Egypt, right? And of course, the commentaries explain that the journeys, the 42 journeys that the Jewish people traveled in the desert, is symbolic and represents the journey of the human being, the life journey. And the life journey is about 42 journeys, or however many journeys, going out of Egypt. In other words, going out of Egypt geographically only happened once, but going out of Egypt for the person's journey happens every single day. Because every single day we're supposed to learn from the day before. We're supposed to graduate from the Egypt of yesterday. Egypt meaning constraints, borders, limitations, as we've talked about many times. The word Mitzrayim coming from the word Meitzar, which means a prison, right? And to grow and to take one more step today. And one more step today is the exodus from yesterday's Egypt, which becomes tomorrow's Egypt. So my redemption of today, my exodus today, is going out of Egypt of yesterday, but my exodus today becomes tomorrow's Egypt, which requires a new exodus, a new redemption, because we've got to keep growing. And how do we do that? By connecting the dots, by connecting the days, by connecting the months, by learning from one step of our journey to another. And this is on all levels, whether it's spiritual, whether it's psychological, whether it's in our relationships. Of course we've got to learn from the past. And not only that, in Jewish literature we know there's a tremendous emphasis on taking responsibility for the past. You can't just say, I did something yesterday, too bad, yesterday, it's gone, boom, move on. Moving on is a beautiful idea, but not if you've caused damage in the process, which you need to fix. So we do. Responsibility is a huge thing. Planning for the future is a huge thing. Of course we have to entertain and investigate and explore what might happen tomorrow, because it affects how we make decisions. It affects the decision-making process of how we go through the steps of life. Right? So of course, the past, the present, and the future are certainly connected. However, what we have to understand is this. There's a specific way how we have to learn from the past and take into account the future, so that the past and the future don't impact negatively on how we maximize the potential of the moment. Right? What do I mean? You see, the past, let's take the past, I'll give an example in a minute. Let's take the past. So the past can guide, should guide, it should inform, it should shape the present. But it has to do it in a healthy way. And the past shaping the present is only healthy when it comes, and here's the key point, when that guidance from the past comes from the perspective of being a value-based process, a moral process, a decision-making process, and not a emotional or judgmental process. Right? Yeah, I'll repeat that. Right. So the past guides, informs, and shapes the present, but it's only healthy when it comes from a perspective that is value-based. I'll explain in a minute. Moral, decision-making, and not from an emotional or judgmental perspective. What do I mean? What I mean is as follows. So let's take an example of someone that's hurt you. Let's say there's a relationship, there's a person that is, every time they talk to you, they insult you, they're needy, they, I don't know. Right? And therefore, I mean, this is not a talk on relationships, so we're just going to do this as an example, right? But we know, as we've talked about many times in the past, there are times when we need to take a relationship. It might be with a loved one, it might be with a friend, it might be with a person in the community, whatever the case is. We need to take relationships and not necessarily cut them off completely, which might also be possible in a certain case. We're not taking that example. But we need to take, because as I've explained previously, not all relationships is that possible to do, or the moral thing to do. It might be a parent or a sister or a relative where maybe it's not the moral thing to do to cut it off completely. But often there are relationships where we need to create boundaries. Because if we don't create boundaries, we will be hurt in the process. And that's very often, that's very common. Right? So we have a relationship. If we don't create a boundary, that means the person can call us whenever they want. They can nudge us whenever they want. They can take hours of our time whenever they want. And they can say whatever they want. They can be disrespectful whatever they want. They can hurt me whatever they want. And that's not a healthy thing. Right? Because part of growing is protecting ourselves. Part of growing is not to be a doormat, but to have a strong sense of self. And therefore, it's okay just as we need to respect everyone else, it's okay in a healthy way to expect some of that respect back, right? Again, this is a much more detailed topic, but not for now, just sort of briefly for the context of what we're talking about. Okay. So we create boundaries, whatever the boundaries is. The boundaries might be that we only spend a certain amount of time with the person. The boundaries might be that, you know, because we think it's important to call that person once in a while or to spend some time with the person, but we create a boundary. So listen, I'm going to meet you, but it's going to be 10 minutes. Or we create a boundaries, we open with the person and we say, listen, I'm happy to call you every week, I'm happy to speak to you, but there's certain things you can't say. Or we plan, and we plan what are we going to respond in a respectful, healthy way if it derails. If I have a discussion with a person and they say something really hurtful to me, how am I going to respectfully end that discussion? Or whatever the case is, right? Those are all appropriate and legitimate things to let the past govern or guide what is going to happen in the present. Yeah, we're okay so far? However, it doesn't always happen that way. And part of why it doesn't always happen that way is because we have strong emotions, which are fine, and those emotions often affect the way we feel in a security sense of the word, so we become insecure and threatened. We're not sure if we can create those boundaries in a proper way. We're not sure what the reaction is going to be. We're not sure how it's going to all plan out. We're not sure how it's going to play out, right? So often what happens is, as soon as we come into contact with that person, in other words, as soon as the experience happens, which I'm now referring to as the now, right? The now is the interaction I'm going to have with that person, let's say. As soon as the now happens, our whole demeanor changes. So we become defensive. The person irritates me, so we become irritable. And sometimes it backfires, so the whole thing blows up. Why? Because we walk into the moment completely judgmentally. Like, I know this person is definitely going to hurt me, they're probably going to say the wrong thing, I can't stand them anyways. They right? Like, I know as I begin to talk to you that it's going to end badly. Right? And sometimes it does end badly, right? Okay? Maybe you shouldn't be talking to them, no, just kidding. Do you understand the difference? In other words, we're not taking the knowledge from the past and making good decisions based on values of how we're going to conduct the present, which is a good thing to do. We're taking the emotion from the past. And that's a problem. Because what that does is, to be really mindful in a Jewish sense means to understand that every moment is a gift from God. Every moment is a purpose. Every moment is a mission. Every moment is potential. Like the story of Reb Zushan and Reb Elimelech that I told you last week. Doesn't matter what happened. With the bucket, without the bucket, whatever it is, we'll make the best of it. Right? And therefore, if I have to have an experience, the experience has to be positive. If I have to have an experience, the experience, and positive doesn't always mean happy, by the way, or positive doesn't always mean pain-free. That's a modern secular thing, that positive equates with pain-free. It doesn't have to be pain-free. Some very, very good things are extremely painful, and that's fine, if that's what has to be. Sometimes we have to have a difficult conversation with someone, and that's painful, and that's okay. But it's got to be a painful experience which we live to the fullest, which we get the most positive fulfillment out of. Very different. Pain and fulfillment are two different things. On the contrary, sometimes the most painful things are the things that bring the most fulfillment. So we've got to go into it with value-based decisions. You know, it's respectful to, I'm just giving an example. This can be on all levels and all types of experiences. But in this particular example, so it's my value-based decision is that I'm still going to talk to the person because I need to. It's a respectful thing to do. It's a parent, it's a sibling, whatever the case, whatever the reason is. But I am going to create boundaries, and those boundaries might be painful. But those are my value-based decisions, so those are the decisions that guide the present. But I'm going to go into the present with confidence. This is the word. I'm going to go into the present with confidence that I can make it work. And therefore, in order to go in with confidence, I need to take with me those value-based decisions, but I need to leave behind the resentment, the fear, the insecurity. Is that clear the difference? Such an important concept, this. The same thing's with the future, by the way. The future's the same thing. Of course we have to explore the future. But we have to consider what we do now, how it's going to impact the future. The problem is, as I said last time, that we mix it up a lot of times. We don't consider what we do now, how it's going to impact the future, and we take the future that we can't control into the present. Right? In Jewish thought, for example, that's the whole idea of bitachon. There's a different, the future and the past are very different, but it's the same sort of idea. Of course we consider the future. So for example, the bitachon concept, which isn't an easy concept, by the way. It's faith, belief in God extended to trusting for the future. What does that mean? That means that I make value-based decisions now. So if someone is, God forbid, not well, it's a value-based decision, not just a normal, not just a practical decision, but it's actually a moral decision to get the best care, to get the best doctors, to make the decisions that are the best suited for the best prognosis for that particular person. But I leave what I can't control, how it's going to turn out, that I leave to God. Sometimes we get paralyzed by the fear of what's going to happen, which impacts an opposite effect. We worry about the things we can't control. We get so paralyzed by that worry that we actually don't make the proper decisions for the present that will actually impact the future, the ones that we can have control over. Because at the end of the day, the control we have is moral control, as we know. Everything is in the hands of heaven, except for fear of heaven. In other words, what does that mean? What does that translate? God runs the entire world, and he leaves moral choices to us. Moral choices can mean spirituality, it can mean responsible living, it can mean health, it can mean lots of things. Those are decisions he leaves to us. And we need to make those decisions with a clear head. And of course, those decisions that we make take into account the future. Of course they take into account the future, because that's what they're based on. But they're not taking the emotional stuff from the future and bringing it into the present. That's why in emotions, this concept of the freshness of the moment, each moment being separate, is so important. Because this moment I have to live to the fullest. This moment I have a mission. This moment I have a purpose. And this moment, for now, is the only moment. But the decisions I make in this moment, I take into account the past, I take into account the future. But emotionally, I'm fully engrossed in the now, without emotion from the past or emotion from the future. Yet, guidance from the past and guidance from the future. Not an easy distinction, but an important one nevertheless. Okay. Now, last week we started to explain that in order to understand this and to be aware of our emotions, we need to understand the building blocks and how our emotions work. So we started to talk about the first three, Chesed, Gvura, and Tiferet. Right? And what we explained was, and this is where we started the discussion very briefly at the end, and I want to continue it up. So Chesed is the first one of our emotions, but not just the first one, as it is with God, by the way. As we know that God created the world in 7 days, 6 days and Shabbat. The 6 days refer to the six functional emotions. God created, that was his way of connecting to the world. And the first one, corresponding to the light which he created on the first day, is the idea of Chesed. Chesed means to give, to connect, to flow out of myself. So Chesed doesn't just mean kindness. The word Chesed, as we've talked about many times, means the ability to go beyond myself. Gevura is more about holding back. Chesed is about letting the flow go. Now the pasuk, the verse tells us, as I mentioned last week, Olam Chesed Yibaneh, that the world was built on kindness. As the Zohar says, what does that mean? What that means is that Chesed, kindness, was not only the first of God's emotions, but kindness was the foundation of all the emotions. In other words, as the sources tell us that, and this is actually mentioned in Rashi, the famous commentator Rashi, that the reason that God created the world, or one of the fundamental reasons or purposes for creation, is that God wanted to give. He wanted to give to an other. Before the creation of the world, God's existence was everything. God wanted to create this concept of giving, so he created an existence which at least superficially appears to be independent. It appears to be outside of him, so that he could give to it. Right? So he created this finite, ungodly world, so to speak. And that was the foundation, which means, therefore, that everything that happens in creation, including the second day, which is Gevura, and the third day, which is Tiferet, and so on and so forth, that all the other six emotions underlying them is the theme of chesed, the theme of connection. Because that was the very essence and reason for creation. Why do I say that? Because the same is with us. Right? The same is with us. Emotions, as we said last week, are there to connect us from inside out. It's there to respond to the outside world. It's there to create a mechanism for us to connect. Relationships are based on emotion. They're guided by the head, but they're based on emotion. Right? So therefore, and the human being was created in the image of God, as we know. What does that mean? That our building blocks, our makeup, is similar to God's. And therefore, for us also, our first emotion is chesed. And therefore, what we need to understand is that by us, chesed is not just the first emotion, it's the foundation of the emotions. In other words, how we connect to the outside world in any emotion, this is the key, and we'll develop it in a moment. Whenever we express emotion, which is defined by connecting to the outside, any emotion, and they're all legitimate, and all have their place, and all have their role, but any emotion must always be connected back and based on the concept of connection, of chesed, of going out of myself to connect to something else. Now, that might mean holding back sometimes. And we'll develop this in a moment. It might be not giving, which is gevurah. But the gevurah can't be to hold back for myself. The gevurah must be to hold back so that I can connect better. Remember that verse we talked about last week? God said, it is not good for a person to be alone or for a person to be lonely. The essence of the human being is not to exist in a vacuum. The essence is to connect with others. The essence of the human being is to create a relationship with close ones, with far ones, and, as Judaism teaches us, with God. Very important thing, by the way. The relationship with God is not just following a God. The Jewish religion is not about following a big boss that created the world and tells us what to do. Jewish religion is actually about creating a relationship with God. That's why love of God, fear of God, all these things, the emotional part of our relationship is so important. Which is why we have prayer. Prayer is a time to emotionally connect with God, which sometimes is difficult in its own right, but that's what the essence of it is. Matan Torah, when God gave us the Torah at Har Sinai, the Talmud says that He lifted up the mountain and waved it on top of us, which according to the mystics was a concept of a chuppah, because the pasuk, the verse refers to Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, as the wedding between God and the Jewish people. Right? So it's a relationship. That's what the essence of the human being is. The essence of a relationship is the ability to go beyond myself. That's what a relationship is. A healthy relationship, that is. Any relationship that is based on self-centeredness is a recipe for disaster. A relationship is about enjoying and seeking meaning and getting fulfillment from the fact that we go beyond ourselves and connect to someone else. That requires a lot of different emotions. Sometimes that's about holding back, or it's about a mixture of emotions, whatever the case is. But chesed is the first one, because chesed is the basis of emotions. Chesed is the foundation of all our emotions. Rabbi Leibel Wolf, in his book that I've been quoting for a little bit, he brings a famous mystical concept that in Kabbalah, chesed is, the symbolism of chesed is water. Which is why also the first day of creation we find that the world was submerged in water. Why water? Water is a flow. And the property of water, the mystics tell us, that just like water flows from top to bottom, by definition, through gravity, but the way it's a flow of water. So too, chesed is the idea of flowing from top to bottom, or giving out of oneself. Right? Just like chesed is the concept of purity and pleasure. Water, sorry, is the idea of purity. We submerge in the waters of mikveh and so on. Same thing, chesed brings us meaning, brings us purpose, it brings us that concept of sense of purpose and meaning. Today, in modern psychology, that's now something which is so well documented, that the feeling of meaning and purpose, remember we did a whole series on Hugh Mackay's book on that, remember? Right, the sense of meaning and purpose can only be achieved through giving, a modern day discovery Like I always say, they could have come to me, I would have saved the money on the research. It's all in our books. All in the original Jewish sources. Right? But they finally discovered that happiness and meaning only comes through giving. Okay? Now, by the way, this water metaphor is because there can be good chesed and bad chesed. If you're taking this concept in Kabbalah, in mysticism, they talk about water being can be a negative thing. Water is a source of pleasure. Sometimes the flow is in the reverse. Chesed is always a flow. But sometimes the flow, instead of being a flow from me outside, it's a flow inside. And therefore, chesed can be a pleasure-seeking experience where I'm drawn to not other people, but I'm drawn to everything that gives me pleasure. So I connect. It's still a connection, but it's a bad connection. I'm connecting to indulgence. I'm connecting to those things which are there to give me pleasure, but not necessarily good for me. So in his book, he does an interesting thing. I'll just share with you this idea. He talks about three friends. I'm not sure if they're real friends or fictitious friends, but three friends. I've just forgotten the name of the book now. It's Practical Kabbalah by Rabbi Leibel Wolf, who's going to be the guest speaker at the Binah function in 2 weeks. Week and a half, sorry. So he says he has three friends. He calls them David, Sarah, and Greg. And he says they both have an issue with chesed. It's a good sort of example to clarify the concept of the healthy flow of chesed. So he says David lives in his life in fast forward, right? And many people do that. And therefore, there doesn't seem to be time for anything. So he's a person that's always meeting deadlines, always setting the expectations of his own goals much too high, and therefore he doesn't have time for any relationships, right? We have people like that. Those are people lacking chesed. He said the next person he said, called Sarah, he's a person that suffers from bouts of guilt, waking up to the repetitive tune of what if, right? So such a person, you know, always, this is what we were talking about before, about bringing the baggage from the past. Bringing the baggage of the past all the time severely damages the ability to have a healthy flow of connection to others, a healthy flow of chesed, a healthy response to others, a healthy continuum of connection to the world around us. Right? Because what happens is when we keep on doing that, we become so self-absorbed that we're always thinking about how this affected me yesterday, what had happened to me, what it was said to me, how did I feel about it. So we're busy with our own emotions to such an extent that it all becomes about our own emotions, right? There's a huge difference between being aware of our emotions, which is a good thing, or to be completely absorbed in our emotions, which is a bad thing, right? And then he talks about his friend Greg, who he says he has amazing chesed. But the problem with him is it's directed at big issues. Such an amazing chesed. You have these people who are such chesed people that they're fixing the world, right? Which some people it's a good thing. So he, you know, he'll volunteer for the non-profit international causes and social justice and all these wonderful, wonderful things. But he said each of them have a problem with their chesed, right? For the first one, it's lack of chesed, lack of relationships. Life is too short. We need to remember that the essence of the human being is connection. And therefore, part of our success as a growing human being is the concept of connecting to others, building relationships. And relationships require effort. And relationships require emotional health. And relationships require the ability to be aware of how we respond to others. And relationships require being aware of the ability to let go of the baggage from the past and to live in the moment and to work on nurturing those relationships and nurturing the sense of giving to others. Then you have the person who... So the first person is not doing relationships. The second person is not living in the moment. And then there's the third person, Greg, who's full of chesed, but it's a bit misdirected. Because as we've talked many, many times, sometimes the most important relationships are the ones we ignore. The people who are close to us, the people who we need to spend time with. The small things. The going out to lunch with a kid. The telephone call which takes 3 minutes. It's those small little things and the small little relationships that are the most critical part to a healthy flow of chesed and kindness. So these are just sort of concepts which highlight that the foundation of our emotional health has to be the concept of connection. And because of that, we sometimes need gevurah. We sometimes need the other emotions. Right? We've seen this triangle before. So we have chesed on the right, gevurah on the left. Because sometimes relationships, connection to others, giving to others means holding back. When we give too much to a child, we spoil the child. When we give bad advice to other people, we are damaging other people. When we suffocate people with our love, often we're not doing them any favor. You know, there are some people that are so giving that they don't let you do anything for themselves, for yourself. They just want to do everything for you. To the point where sometimes it derails into a concept of control because it's so giving and the giving becomes self-centered. Right? So sometimes love and giving is about holding back. It's about letting people do things, letting people be independent, letting people sometimes even make their own mistakes, depending on the context. Again, this is not the discussion for this, but gevurah is sometimes a part of giving. But gevurah can be bad. Gevurah is sometimes synonymous with aggression, with hate, with resentment, with rejection. What's the difference? Very simple. If the gevurah, if the foundation of all our emotions is chesed, then the gevurah will direct itself in the right place. If the foundation of our emotions is not chesed, then the gevurah can become distorted gevurah, can become aggression, can become rejection. The holding back can be withdrawal, weakening relationships, not giving. Right? Which all comes together, at least in that first triangle, with a concept that we've talked about before, the concept of Tiferet. And Tiferet is the idea of beauty. Now, we've talked about Tiferet many times. I want to just extend it a bit today. And just so we put it all together a little bit before we go to the next triangle. In Kabbalah, Tiferet has multiple meanings. But I want to show you how they're all one meaning. They're all one thing. The word Tiferet over here is translated as beauty, which is correct because that's the translation of it. Okay. Sometimes Tiferet is translated as harmony. Other times we find in other sources that Tiferet is considered compassion, to have mercy on someone, be compassionate to someone. In Kabbalah that's called the Midah, the characteristic of Yaakov, because Abraham is Chesed, Yitzchak is Gevurah, an idea of Rachmonis, as they call it in Hebrew and Yiddish, is the idea of Yaakov, that's also Tiferes. And very often we find that Tiferet is called truth. Truth. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, there's a verse that says, Titein emet le Yaakov, chesed le Avraham. Give truth to Yaakov and kindness to Avraham. So same thing, Avraham is chesed, Yitzchak is gevurah, and Yaakov is truth. Which is also synonymous sometimes with the concept that we find in the patriarchs, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, that Yaakov was also synonymous with the concept of learning Torah, Torah being a Torah of truth. We'll see why in a second. Right, it says, Yaakov, Ishtam Yoshev Alim, when it describes Yaakov when he was born and him and his brother grew up, it says his brother Esau became a hunter, whereas Yaakov was a man of tents. He sat in the tents of learning. He was learning Torah. We find this with much greater emphasis with Yaakov than with the others. So how do all these translations of the Tiferet come together? The way it works is like this. Let's go backwards. Let's start from truth. When we talk about emotions like chesed and gevurah, the right and the left, personalities that we all have, some of us are more chesed, some of us more gevurah, which is okay, by the way, as long as the foundation ultimately is chesed. Right? The difference, when we respond emotionally to the outside world, in a pure sense, in a raw sense, isolated emotions are about our response. So when I respond, it's me responding. Right? So if I get upset with someone, or if I love someone, or whatever the case is, chesed alone or gevurah alone often is about how I respond. Most times based on my personality, or the way I'm feeling that day, or whatever the case is. What Tiferet does, being in the middle, Tiferet says, let's switch this around. Instead of responding what you feel, respond in a way of truth. Respond what is necessary. Or at least channel your emotions to what's going to work. Work to create the best connection, the best purpose, the best meaning. Right? So let's go back to that very simple analogy that I've always given you. Again, it's a simple analogy. It doesn't always work and it depends on the situation. It's just an analogy. So you walk in the street and a homeless person approaches you. Can I have $10? The chesed person right away says yes. The gevura person says get lost. What does the tiferet person say? I'll buy you a sandwich. Why? The chesed person says right away yes because his or her emotion is I can't say no. I'm too giving for that. Someone says give me $10, of course, no problem. The gevura person, supposedly for the benefit of the person who's making the request, says, I know what he's going to do with the money, he's going to go buy drugs, so forget it, jump in the lake. The problem with both responses is they're coming from the person. It's what I want to respond. It's based on my personality. Yes, rationalize, it could be a good personality. It could be even based on chesed to a certain degree because I don't want the person to harm themselves, whatever the case is. But it's coming from me. Tiferet says, forget about me. I do have feelings. Let me channel those feelings into what is the right thing to do. It's the value-based response. It's putting all emotions together to mix them with the right ingredients to get the cake that's going to work. So Tiferet says, just think for a moment, because the middle emotion goes all the way up to Dat, to the real process of knowledge, and says, connection, relationships, the person is hungry, but the person could do something harmful. So the Tiferet says, let me give, but hold back at the same time. Says the person, come across the road to the deli, I'll buy you a sandwich. So you've given, but you've held back. You didn't say yes, but then you did give, but you did it in the right way. You did what was beneficial for the relationship, what was beneficial for the situation, what was the most meaningful and true and value-based thing to do for this particular experience. Okay, so I understand that, and everything is dependent. It's more the analogy I'm giving, where and probably has to be developed differently in every situation and how that would work. Just for the purpose of the discussion, or just the simple way of right, yeah. I'm saying for the person who says yes, you know, who will take it, right? Okay. So that's why Tiferet is called truth, because subjectivity is never truth. To get truth, it needs an objective perspective. And that's what Tiferet allows us to do. Tiferet allows us to bring truth into the equation so that we can still use our emotions, because emotions are very important. And we can be aware of what we are feeling. We can know what part of us is good and what we can use, what part of us we shouldn't use, and what part of us we need to modify. It's all good, all part of the mindfulness and awareness of what we're feeling. But we use the concept of truth, which is why often Yaakov is truth, and Torah, same idea, value-based moral compass, to be able to develop what is the moral thing to do, what is the right thing to do, what's going to bring me closer to humanity, what's going to bring me closer to morality, what's going to be closer to create good relationships. I'm just giving you one example, but it's true in everything. It's true particularly with emotional responses that are in relationships that are very close to us. Sometimes for the right reason, we want to scream at our kids, but it's not necessarily the effective thing to do. So Tiferet is that concept of it allows us to take that pause, go back to the head, mix the emotions properly, and bring a response where the flow of chesed as a foundational thing will flow peacefully, will flow like water, will work, will be effective. That's why it's called truth. That's also why it's called compassion. Because compassion, the way the mystics talk about compassion at least, is different to kindness. Kindness means I always give, but I only give when I think it's deserving. If I'm going to get angry with a person, I don't give. So I'll give as long as you please me. If you don't give, yeah. Compassion means I understand that you don't deserve it, but I'm going to give you anyway. That's what the word compassion means. Compassion on a judgment would mean you're not deserving, but you'll get it anyways. Again, it's like almost a mixture of chesed and gevurah. It's a compassion where compassion is necessary. So again, like the analogy of a parent will say to a child, no, you didn't do the right thing, but in this particular case, I can see you're sorry, or whatever the case is, I'll give you one more chance, because you think that's effective. Not from a weakness, from a strength. So Tiferet is compassion from a strength, which is again a mixture of chesed and gevurah. And with that compassion, and with if it comes from that point of view, when it comes from that perspective, when it comes from the concept of the mix of chesed and gevurah, and it comes from the truth, then it can have all different combinations because it comes from a strength. And therefore, sometimes it means holding back for the right reason. And holding back is not always sometimes that's a real strength if it's done properly. You can have the firmness in a relationship. Sometimes you can have tough love. Sometimes not. Sometimes it's all about making the right value decision of how to mix the various emotional responses. But going back to what we said last week and today, for that you have to be aware of your own emotional makeup. You have to be aware of what you are feeling to know what to do with your emotions, right? It takes a lot of self-awareness to do this and to know where things are coming from also. Like, you know, you need to know sometimes, you know, I want to do something. It becomes very hard to know, yes, I want to do it, but that's me that wants to do it. Not necessarily that's good for the experience. That takes a lot of self-awareness and a lot of strength. But if we can do it, Tiferet is an amazing, liberating emotion. That's why it's truth. That's why it's compassion. And that's why it's harmony and beauty. First of all, the reason it's called beauty is because the mystics tell us just like a garment is more beautiful sometimes when it's multicolored. Right? Sometimes you can have something which has many colors. If the colors match and come together in a proper way, it's beautiful. That's what beauty means. The Zohar calls it kamo gavnin, many multicolored emotion, because Tiferes has that ability to mix the chesed, the gevura, and so on. But it's also harmony, because this is the key to inner peace and inner tranquility. What brings us tension in our lives has nothing to do with our head. It's all to do with the heart. It's all to do with our emotion. And either our emotional deficits or our emotional unhealth or emotional dysfunction, where we feel guilty or we feel pulled or we feel aggression or we feel hate or we feel maybe I didn't do it or revenge or you know, did I do the right thing? Didn't do the right thing? All these questions, all to do with how we feel about what's happening outside of us. But when we introduce into our emotional equation, again, after being have an incredible sense of self-awareness, after we include the characteristic or the emotion of Tiferet, which is the ability to seek truth, and it's the ability to step back and say, it's not about me, what I feel, it's about what is the right thing to do. For example, going back to that concept we talked about before about creating boundaries. Sometimes that needs to happen. Often that needs to happen. And those are in relationships where we need a mix of chesed and gevurah, where we're not prepared to cut off the relationship completely, but we understand, or we've explored, we've processed it, or we've spoken to others, whatever the case is, and we know that the right thing is to create certain boundaries. But we do it from a sense of strength, we do it from a sense of purpose, we do it from a sense of morality, where it's the moral thing to do and the right thing to do. It creates harmony because I know that I'm doing the right thing. If we have a sense of focus, if we have a sense of truth, if we have a moral compass, it allows the emotions of the person in a much stronger way to blend into each other and to be used in a much more harmonious and therefore peaceful way. Because I bring a sense of objective truth into managing my emotions. Does that make sense? Right? I'm not saying this is easy, by the way. We spend a whole life trying to do this. But that's okay. And we get it right sometimes and not right other times, and that's okay. And sometimes it takes a lot of self-discipline and a lot of self-thought. You know, I always say, I tell you the stories that work. I don't tell you the stories that don't work, right? So please don't get any illusion that, well, I wouldn't say I'm not a perfect person, because that's just really ridiculous, but I'm not even close. But somehow I was able to do this last week, where I shared something with someone which I knew was the right thing to do. Absolutely, I mean, I discussed it with others, I knew it was the absolute right thing to do for the benefit of the person, for morale, whatever the case was, the details aren't important. And the person is now upset with me. And I'm not in a bad way, but I'm completely okay with it. But I'm completely okay with it, just to extend the example for a second, for two reasons. First of all, I know that it's the right thing to do. It was the right thing to do. I also understand her. That's very, very important also. Empathy is a very important part of the equation. So I had to sit down. At first I thought, so why is she upset with me? That's a bit ridiculous. And I thought, no, I understand. It doesn't take away from what I was supposed to do, because I know I had to do what I had to do. Right? But because I understand her, and this part is often very, I'm convinced, and this doesn't always work, I'm convinced in this particular case, it's a matter of time. We'll get that person back. It's not a problem. I know that. Why? Because I'm not going to take it personally, because I only tell you the stories that work. But, right? Not always it works like this. Okay. No, why? Why do I know? Why do I know it's going to work? Because in this case, I've successfully used Tiferet. Why? Because I didn't take it personally. For me, it's an objective moral compass direction that I knew I did the right thing. I understand her, so I understand why she's upset. And I'm not upset with her for being upset. Therefore, which often is the case, by the way, because often the cycle just continues. I do something, you're upset. Why are you upset? I don't know. Therefore, I'm upset. Why are you upset? And therefore, I don't call you before Rosh Hashanah to say good year. Now you're upset with me. Why am I upset with you? Because I'm upset with you. And it just continues, right? That's where it goes. So I will. If I happen to meet her, which probably will be less often now, I will be incredibly polite. I will find a way of connecting to her in positive ways, without undermining what I shared with her, which was I needed to share with her. And eventually, time will heal. I know that, because it takes two to fight, right? Yes.
Rabbi, at the start you mentioned 42 journeys, and I don't know, I might have missed it because I was a couple of minutes late. Were the 42?
Yeah, I'm not sure. The 42 journeys were the journeys that the Jewish people did in the desert. They traveled 42 times.
Oh.
So the Zohar says that it's symbolic of the journeys of life.
Okay, so the number.
So I'm not. Yeah. Well, the number 42 is a Kabbalistic thing. It's got to do one of the formations of God's name, and it's a whole.
Okay.
It's a name of elevation. So maybe that's the significance of 42. But it wasn't so much the number I was dwelling on. I was dwelling on the concept that we have. So that's how Tiferet works. And that's why Tiferet is called harmony, right? So let's just summarize, therefore, bringing the concept again of being mindful back into this. This can only happen with some thought, with self-awareness, and for understanding the roles of emotion. So self-awareness means to know what I'm feeling, to know that I'm normal, it's okay to feel that way. To know where it's coming from, to be aware of it, to manage it correctly, but then to always fall back and to understand that my emotional makeup begins with chesed. Chesed is the foundation of my emotions, because emotions are to connect, and therefore I need to bring Tiferet into it, which Tiferet will help me say what is going to be not the expression of self, but what is going to be the response that will create better connections and will be from a value-based decision and not from an emotional tension. When we do that, that creates the flow of chesed, that creates the flow of emotion to be in a much more harmonious and peaceful way. Not easy, but it's something we can work on, something we can do sometimes at least. And when it works, it's the most amazing concept. And we can progress and we can try to do better all the time. Next week, we're going to finish off this whole idea. We're just going to talk about the second triangle and just how that supports the first triangle and the other three emotions and so on, so that we can bring it all together. Have a great week.